Not having it run through your family.
That's right.
That's you, the worst.
You keep it contained. Although Heather and I last year, we went out to dinner with some extended family, had a really nice time and all that stuff, and get back home, and all of a sudden both of us start feeling really strange. Well, long story short, we ended up spending the entire week on the floor in different bathrooms, because thank God we have two bathrooms in the house, just sick out of our mind. I mean, we just wanted to die. We wanted it to be over. And somehow, I don't even know how, because it was a blur, our kids ended up getting to school and back. Like, somebody must have been coming to pick them up and bring them to school, because it wasn't us, which was wonderful.
All right. Well, that's a good
one. Well, welcome everyone to another special live edition. Do we still say it's a special live edition, Katie? We've been doing these live for like a year and a half now, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is just Spilling Ink, okay? This is how it goes now.
But we are sponsored this time.
Ooh. Wait, hang on. We've got to make Katie large. There we go. We are sponsored today by David Jones Scruffy's Treasure Hunt. And David is actually one of the founders of this show. Great guy. We don't see him very often anymore because he's doing some really cool design work, and he's working on making his own board games, which he graciously sent to us to try out. So we're really, really proud of David and happy to have those. So thank you so much, David, for sharing your passion with us. That's awesome.
Yeah, and I can tell you that we have already done one little play test on this game with my family. On the box, it says for ages 6 up, and my boy child is 8. He was able to set up the board himself. He had a great time putting it together. The first run through on the game went smoothly. So it's definitely a good kids game, and the cards and everything are absolutely adorable.
That's awesome. Yeah. And the artwork is great. Really top notch artwork on there. So, I will introduce everybody. I am the Jason Lavelle. You all know me. You know me. I am like the rock, and everyone else is like the water splashing against the rock, maybe beating me down into nothing. How did the end of Legends of the Fall go? Was Tristan the rock, or was he the water, or was he the wind? Or was he the bear? Nobody knows. Did nobody watch Legends of the Fall?
Yeah,
no. Oh my Lord, guys!
I read the book.
Oh well, I didn't. I didn't know there was a book. I only.
Yeah, it's based on a novella, I think.
Oh,
I read it years ago, so I don't remember. But
okay,
I like the book.
All right. Well, I love the movie, and it was like a 4-hour movie. So on a novella, that's impressive. Well, the black box down there is Jane Taylor, who is going ghost mode at the moment. She's gone all ninja on us. Then yeah, we have the lovely Katie Salitis up there. And then joining us tonight is the great Author Goddess. All right, Author Goddess. Hello. How are you?
Peachy.
She also has
or maybe Apple.
And then also Anita Stewart. Anita, how are you tonight?
Hello. I am good.
Awesome.
Jerry?
I'm super jealous of your headset. You look so official.
Yeah.
I like it. You do. I could see you as a radio show host.
Ooh, yeah.
That'd be cool.
Oh, I'm not sure about that. My voice is kind of whiny, but thank you.
Now, Anita, you do a show as well, right?
Yeah, I do. It's a sort of sporadic thing called Between the Pages Book Chat, where I go one-on-one with the authors for about 20 minutes and talk about their book.
I love that. I love just getting to, like, I listen to a lot of podcasts while I'm working, and I love hearing these interviews and seeing how other authors approach their work, how they, you know, put their work out there, and you know, sometimes the trials that they've gone through and like the, you know, lessons learned.
Yeah. I've come across some interesting books and we've done some horror. We've done some mystery. We did a few thrillers. Bobby Nash did a great interview with his thrillers. I really enjoyed that one. And I had an author who did Arthur Conan Doyle and a couple other historical figures as solving mysteries. That was a very interesting interview too.
No, that's cool. And what is the name of that show again?
It's a Between the Pages book chat. Okay. You can find all the videos on my author Facebook page, and I did the latest one is on YouTube as well. I'm going to switch them all over to YouTube eventually when I get the time.
Now, what platform are you using?
I'm using this one, StreamYard, okay. And I'm broadcasting now. I'm broadcasting to Facebook and YouTube. So,
I love the ability to be able to go to both. We just signed up for the I guess next level of service above free, but not quite the professional level. And just the ability to go to both of those channels is excellent. And one of the reasons I felt like we needed to was because just streaming to Facebook was fine on Facebook. But anytime I wanted to download that video and move it over to YouTube, I couldn't get good quality at all.
Yeah, I like the multi-streaming as well. I also do a segment called Author Advice, where I talk about something. I've done Patreon, Twitter, and submissions to anthologies so far. And one of these days I'm going to be doing DUI book covers. Because I do my own book cover, so I figured I'd give a little
listen to that one
demonstration on how to do it if you can't afford a professional artist. Yes, because I recommend you get a professional artist if you are an indie author, but if you can't afford one, I can tell you how to do a decent enough cover.
That's awesome. Well, and before we get too deep in tonight's topic, which will be coming up, because we have a super, you know, strict topic thing now that we do. I would love to hear a little bit about, you know, what you write, Anita, and what you write, Sarah, if you could. I'm sorry, Author Goddess. If you wouldn't mind telling us what you do.
Well, I write horror and dark fantasy. There's my dark fantasy, the first book in my series, Ghosts of the Sea Moon.
Hey, let me make you bigger. Oh, that's Katie. That's not you.
There it is. Okay, that's the paperback cover. I've recently changed the cover on the ebook to a ship with a kraken trying to destroy it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and there's the second book. I like this cover best, Souls of the Dark Sea.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Yeah, anyway, and that's dark fantasy, epic fantasy. And I've got some a horror series collection. And I also do poetry. This is my latest one.
Ooh,
Places of Poetry.
Ooh, nice. Hey, that looks really familiar. Where have I seen? I think that I was talking to Rebecca.
Rebecca, yeah. She's read that one. She actually likes my books, Rebecca.
Well, Anita thinks that all the reviews about her books are just lying. Because they're not actually great, but they are great, aren't they?
Well, yeah, they are. People seem to like my books mostly. I just don't know why, really, but whatever. If they buy them and they like them, that's good.
That's all. If they buy them and they like them, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Sprinkle on a little Coke between every page so they open it and they're like, oh, yeah, I love this book. I just can't get enough of this. I need more Anita Stewart.
I think we're onto something here. Is there a way we can monetize this? Yes.
Wait, legally?
I live in Canada. I could use cannabis. It's legal here.
Oh, yeah. Hey, it's legal in Michigan, too. We're good here.
Yeah.
You can't use vapes, but you could use cannabis.
Yep.
Oh, goodness. Well, Sarah, tell us about yourself. What do you write?
Mostly fantasy everything. So, like, paranormal horror, fantasy, high fantasy, urban fantasy, dark fantasy, paranormal romance. Just pretty much anything with a fantasy twist, but also things without a fantasy twist as well.
Did you say horror fantasy?
Paranormal horror, yeah.
Oh, I thought, but yeah. Also fantasy? Like, what is horror fantasy?
Oh, I think there was a comma in there.
Oh, there's a comma? Oh, all right. See, commas stay
live. There is horror fantasy.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's like the fantasy that's between fantasy and grimdark. It's not dark enough for grimdark, but it's a little darker than what normally you'd have in dark fantasy.
Okay.
And
basically a lot of people die in fantasy settings.
I like it.
Yeah, because my new horror book is a horror fantasy, because it's all fantasy stories, but they are definitely horror.
Okay. Well, now, before the show, we were talking about topics, and Jane down there really wanted to talk about sex. Is that what we're doing today, or did we have a different idea what we were going to talk about?
I think we're going to talk about something different.
I
think the actual conversation that came about was, we were talking about how Jane hasn't put sex in her books in how long?
And that's why she's so crabby.
About 6 months since we started. Is it 6 months since we started writing, Katie?
Oh, so now that means I'm to blame.
You read the Fire Curse series. That has a little.
Yeah, but that's got a teenage protagonist, so it was kind of like, you're not going to go full on with that one.
Right, true. I think the full on ones with the fairy tales.
Yeah, the fairy tales.
I'm sorry, Brian. But yeah, we were talking about how my husband was kind of like, huh, where is it?
Oh, we've got another comment from Brian Tan, and it says, let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. I don't want to keep going with it, but that was a great comment. Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, we were also talking about sprints, pros and cons.
Sprints, yes, yes. I prefer...
You should never sprint through your sex scenes.
No, definitely not.
You don't want to do that.
No. Well, you know what? And I kind of have a formula where I will... The first one is just super quick. It's almost fade to black. And then the next one, maybe you get a little bit more details. And then you've got one good solid sex scene somewhere in there, if it's a book that has sex in it. But that way, it's kind of, there's some building tension, and you know by the end, you're going to get that release. So that's how I like to do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I prefer sprint distance triathlons over Olympic, because I get tired out. I do. I really do. Yeah. I'm not sure what this means.
To weigh in on this.
Well, Julia has weighed in with a no two pump chumps. I'm not sure what that means, Julia. I'm not familiar with that. I'm not familiar with that.
2 minute tango.
I like that one better.
Sprinting. Okay, why would we talk about sprinting? Well, guys, for anyone who's doing it, you already know, but it is NaNoWriMo or NaNoWriMo, however you're saying it to yourself in your heads. And
people who don't know what that is, it's NaNoWriters Month.
That's right. National Novel Writing Month, where all of these crazy, crazy writers out there are trying to write a 50,000 word book in 1 month. It's a big thing. It's a big deal. A lot of people are doing it. Is anyone in this group doing it? All right.
I'm kind of half doing it. I'm doing it more from a coaching angle. But yeah, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's awesome. Yeah.
Well, sprints themselves, I've been doing that since I started writing, and I was part of Backspace Org way back when. Nice. Okay, that was a squirrel moment. they get words out of you. Good, bad, or indifferent, they get them on the page. And if you're, well, I'm a competitive spirit. So if I'm writing with somebody else and doing this, I know they're a prolific writer. I try to beat them. So yes, it's usually kind of crap, but at least I'm in the ballpark most of the time, and I get words down on the page. And when you have a tight schedule, these little sprints, especially when you're doing it with somebody else, are very helpful. So, you know, Katie's coaching is spot on that, you know, just get it down.
It absolutely works. And whether or not it's not a matter of whether they're good words or not. It's a matter of forcing yourself to get the words out. And so from that perspective, it's an excellent way to motivate yourself to get those words done. It's also a good social thing because, you know, writing isn't a solitary endeavor. There's kind of like that whole, it takes a village with the child. Well, it kind of takes a village to be an indie author too.
Yes. Yeah,
you're writing the book yourself, but to do everything else to be in the community, it's a community effort. And so getting involved in the community also helps that as well.
Yeah, I just started doing them this year. And I'm finding it's helped me with not being distracted, because I sit down and I write for 20 minutes and then I get my words in instead of sitting down, staring at the page, you know, wondering if I should go and get a snack. You know, should I check Facebook first before I start writing?
Yes, Facebook, then snack, and then Instagram.
No, it's snack first, because I got the leftover Halloween candy.
Don't forget to open the mail that's been sitting on your desk for a month.
That's right.
Yeah, well, I don't get much actual mail, so. The emails that have been sitting on my in my folder for a month, yes.
Well, and life as a writer is, you know, whether you're full-time or part-time, and the full-timers, I think, really have a better grasp at this than part-timers like me, but, you know, it's a lot of it really is about avoiding that distraction and mental discipline. But for those of us that don't have the ability to be a full-time writer like me, where, okay, I may only have so many hours in a week that I can do this, I think that these type of sprints are actually really cool. Because like Katie said, it's just about getting words out. And, you know, I've always thought, because this year I'm not doing Nano, but in previous years, I've always done it. And I usually get, you know, through 20, 25 days before I'm just completely burnt out and I can't do it anymore. But the cool thing is, though, that in those days that you're able to sprint, you can get so many words down, and that's a big jump start on your project. So even if you're not getting to your 50,000 words, even if you only get 10,000 words, that's 10,000 words that you now have done on that book or that short story, whatever it is you're writing. And that's an awesome thing. You know, I'm gonna jump on. Katie, you've been hosting some sprints with Three Furies, I see, and yourself. And later on this month, when I finish a couple books I'm reading, I'm going to jump on there because I need to hammer out another short story. And I'm like, what better way than to dive in with some sprinters and really pound it out.
Let me add to your point there too, because you made a great point about, you know, the full-time writers versus the writers who have day jobs and other requirements that limit their writing time. Nothing motivates like a deadline. And for writers who are full-timers, sometimes we get lost in the, you know, daily grind of other things. And we actually don't have as much writing time during the day as we expect to. Same thing with the people who work all day or have a, you know, outside jobs or people to take care of. They don't have much time during the day. But these sprints, you're talking about a 20 to 30 minute writing session, maybe a couple times in one night. So let's say an hour's worth of actual writing time in your 24-hour day, we're only committing 1 hour. And let's say in those 2 30-minute writing sessions, you get 1,000 words in. All right, just adding the numbers up here. A standard novel, average length is 80,000 words. You will have a full-size novel in 3 months' time if you were to force yourself to write 1,000 words every single day. And that's 1 hour's commitment, essentially, if you follow that math. So looking at that, you could have 3 books written in a year with only committing 1 hour a day. And these sprints kind of get you to see that you can really put a lot of words out in a small amount of time if you just set your mind to it.
That's very true. And I want to read this comment from Mike Faria. Mike, I'm sorry again about the bad joke. And Katie, I would like you to address this, or Jane, if you want to. So Mike writes, "I wish it worked better for me." Yeah, he's talking about sprinting. "But my story is very intricate. If I start screwing up and don't pay attention to important parts, I'm going to have a lot of fixes to make and lots of axing of needless text." Oh, that seems like a pretty good point. What do you think, guys?
You know what? You're the one who says it all the time about killing your darlings. You can't be afraid to revise your work.
Yeah.
And the constant struggling over what to write actually slows you down more than if you just let yourself free write, understanding that you're going to revise it later.
Mm-hmm. Right. And,
you know, cutting chapters or not.
And trying to be perfect in the first draft is a time suck.
It really is.
I used to write linearly, even with the sprints, but writing with Katie has taught me different ways. Yeah. And it's actually much more creative, and it gets more down rather than getting stuck here and going, okay, I got to get the details. I got to get the details. It's like, okay, park that, do a different scene, park that, do a different scene. And then you have to marry it all together. And the sprints kind of help with that.
Well, and, you know, and,
but I've been sprinting since day one. So,
and Mike, I'll share kind of my experience with you on that. And then I want to kind of turn it over to Sarah and Anita to see if they have any input. When I've done NaNoWriMo in past years, what I've done is I've picked out, and it's funny because, Julie had mentioned something about it, and then Jane just mentioned something about writing out a scene. Is what I would do is I would say, okay, well, I know that this is what I want to happen next. And so I'm going to try to shoot for a block of text that will encompass this, that's going to be around 2,000 words. And that would be my goal, is just to write and write and write, but know that I've got to also I've got to fill it out enough that I get to that goal word count of mine. And that seemed to work pretty well for me. But like now I've been struggling with short stories, because for some reason with short stories, I feel like I need to write it the right way the first time. And I'm having a tough time getting out of my head. So, you know, 10,000 word short story might take me a month or two. And I'm like, dude, I mean, this could be a couple days if I just, you know, turned part of my brain off and just wrote through it and revised it really well. And Mike, I think that that's kind of what the spirit of sprinting is, you know, shut down that perfectionist that's in your head and just focus on getting words on the paper or on the, you know, document, so to speak.
But, I know when I do sprints, and I was saying this before we recorded, the words I'm writing aren't great. They're okay. I'm moving through a scene. It's going to need to be revised, but I tend to overtell when I sprint, which means I'm going to have to do a lot more revisions, but yeah. I'm still getting I'm still getting more words on the page. I'm still giving myself a direction to go, which actually, when it comes to revising, makes it that much easier, because I can recognize, oh, I've already said that. I've already explained that. And I can just cut, move on.
Yeah. Coming from the other side of it, because before this novel I'm doing now, I was working on a very intricate historical fantasy, which I had to put on hold because it needs more research. So I can get where Mike's coming from, because, you know, when you're doing something like that, sometimes you do have to stop and you have to do research, or you have to stop and you have to think about how this is going to affect this and whatnot. So it might be more effective for him to block scenes, not necessarily do outlines, but just block a scene, and even if it's just in his head, before doing the sprints, because that's what I've been doing with my sprints, because I've been doing scene outlines for this book. So I've just been going over the scenes that I have outlined before I do the sprints and figure out what I'm going to do, what's going to happen in this and this and this, and then I can just write it.
What about you, Sarah? Do you take part in any sprinting, anything like that?
Oh, yeah. I love sprinting. And the thing that changed my life is going to make pantsers' heads explode. Outlining. Seriously. Do not think of it as locking yourself into a plan. Think of it as a really, 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 really Spartan first draft. You take care of all of that complexity. You can get your research already done. You already know the little details. Yeah, you might have to look up one or two things, but, you know, a lot of people use like placeholders, like do like the square bracket thingies and be like, find out information here, which I've totally done. But you know, you don't have to do that. You need a Mos Eisley bar scene. Write a Mos Eisley bar scene. You don't have to plan out what the kind of car he's driving to pull up to the bar is. You know, that kind of thing. You can figure out what kind of scene you're looking for and write out all of those lovely interactions between the characters and the dialogue and all of that. Get all of that taken care of, but make sure you know where you're going with your story so that you can find those those things that you can just go ahead and write.
Oh. Yeah, I had an outline for Winter's Heart that I got, so it didn't follow it. It followed half of it, you know, this way. But I had an outline, and that was the only, I think that was the only reason why my short story turned into a 27,000 word book, not novella. But that was the only reason why I was able to get it done in the small window I had.
Yeah, you had a very short window.
Huh?
You had a very short window to do that in.
Yeah. So
I want to echo that point too. I don't think even being a pantser, because I'm mostly a pantser, I don't think having direction is a bad thing. And for pantsers, you know, we want to experience it organically as we're creating, which is great. But if we don't have direction, that's what leads to writer's block, where you don't know what to do, or I don't have to get the character out of this problem. So going in, and I used to call it doing a to-do list. Beat sheets are actually what I've been using lately, which is very simple, like one sentence for certain plot points. So I know what should happen here and then move on.
Yeah, and that's very helpful for us writing together too.
So I have a question. Mm-hmm. Why is writing out a scene when you know like the kind of basic idea of what the scene is supposed to say less organic than just like falling into it?
I think we get a vision early on. I'm going to just speak from the pantser side, because I'm sure that plotters look at things differently. But just from the pantser side, I can be, you know, approaching a book going, okay, I want them to do this, 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 and this. While I have the idea of the direction I want them to go, I don't actually have the scene visualized completely. I just know this is what I want them to do. And so when I write that little beat sheet or that to-do list out, I'm outlining, okay, here's where they should do this, here's where they should do that. But I don't actually have the scene right there yet. As I'm writing it and I get to that next point on the list where, oh, I should write the Mos Eisley bar scene. Now I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write that because I know this is what should happen. And I'm sure the plotters will approach it much differently.
Okay. I would like to say
that's exactly how plotting works.
Yeah. I would like to say from a plotter's point of view, even when you write the scenes down in nice little order, you come to the scene, it changes entirely. And then you have to change the rest of the outlines. It is very organic. It's like, okay, this is what I think should happen in the outline. And when you get to the book, this is what really happens. It all changes.
Thank you.
Or there's the lovely outline that is all nice and crisp and clean. And then all of a sudden you get this idea in the middle of the night. And it's like,
yeah, and everything changes.
Yeah,
Scenes are taken. Well, like even today when I was writing, I accidentally skipped over a whole bunch of scenes, and then I had to redo it and fix it, and then add some more stuff. And then I had planned to make a philosophical air elemental, except he turned a little less philosophical and a little more crazy.
Which is awesome.
So, I mean, he's not philosophical anymore, but he's a lot more fun.
Well, you know, I had a great outline made up for my novel in progress, and I was super proud of it because it's actually about a real life woman's life, and so I wanted to keep some things fairly accurate, even though it's going to be fiction. And so I'm writing this, you know, I'm, you know, maybe 40,000 words into it, and I realized that I'm changing little things here and there, but I'm not noting it on the outline. And the whole purpose of the outline was so that I could look back and see where I needed to go. And so now it's just all completely effed. And I'm like, damn it, this is pantsing all over again. I wrote this for no reason. But it does help, because once you finish one scene, you can always look at that outline and know where you're supposed to go next. You know, even if you know you're going to completely deviate from your overall, you know, plot, at least you have a direction to keep moving in. So in that way, it's really nice.
Yeah, you have a compass of where you want to go.
Yeah,
you might not know how to get there, but you need to go north.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, you're following your GPS, and then all of a sudden there's construction. What are you going to do? Like, Yeah. Continue going through the construction? No, you find your way around it.
Yeah. Well, and Mike, again, Mike, you've had some really good comments on here. And this comment actually brings up a larger problem here. You know, yeah. Mike says, I found myself looking up weapon types, armor, and war strategy. And then he also said he's going to make a decent general at some point. But, you know, this is something that happens to me a lot, especially when I'm trying to free write, is I'll get to a point and I'm like, well, what the hell kind of gun does a detective carry? I don't want to get this wrong. And then guess what? I stop writing. I open up Google and I research it.
On Google for the rest of the night.
And 20 minutes later, I'm still on Google. So it's that research problem is, you know, what do you do when you come up on a scene where you're like, oh, I this does need research. How do you keep moving past that without your brain imploding?
Comments.
Yeah. Bracket what you need to look up, you know, XYZ gun that detectives use.
Yeah. Just highlight the passage, put a little comment in the thing and go, yeah, look up, demonology needs this.
You know. Sawyer, by the way.
What?
Yeah, the street tool is the only things you actually have to look up are the ones that actually affect the direction that your story is going.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, sort of. You know, it depends on what type of book you're. I mean, if you're writing a really deep mystery or thriller, you really have to have the details right. I mean, you look at Tom Clancy and how detail-oriented his books were on strategy, as he's talking about, and things like that.
But that fantasy,
fantasy and romance and paranormal and things like that have a little bit more latitude on creating the world we want.
Unless you're writing historical fantasy.
Right, exactly.
And then you have to do lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of research.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. It drives you mad. And you have to stop.
That still goes back to the idea that you don't actually have to look it up in the first draft unless it's affecting the way direction
is going. Yeah, so. Sometimes you do. Because I had to look up.
Fight.
I was writing this thing on. I'm writing this historical fantasy set in 15th century Venice, and some of the stuff I'm doing, I need to know. Can he cross a bridge here? Can he go down the alley? Can he open a freaking cabinet? Because I don't know what 15th century Italian cabinets look like.
That was my hope.
Yeah, I had to do a little research as I was writing on that one.
Right, but that affects the direction your story's going.
Yeah. Like 15th century Venice is way too complicated. I have to do some more research before I keep writing it.
Would you like to join our conversation?
Go from the world of theology to the world of mystic creatures?
Yes. He's like, can I go from the world of theology to the world of mystic creatures? So, yeah.
Okay, Mike, this is exactly what Anita and Sarah were just talking about. There, you know, he says there might be intricacies in the fight scene that can be important later. And then, yes, that is something that's going to affect your plot. But if you have an idea of because you know in your head what that intricacy is going to be, for the most part. You may not know the weapon exactly or the type of armor exactly, but if you know that character X is going to be injured by character D in this fight scene, then, you know, in theory, you can just say, there's an injury here. You know, this happens here and move past it. Or go ahead, Anita.
Sometimes you have to look up those injuries.
Right.
Because I had a scene where I had a guy's tongue get cut out. And I looked it up. You can actually die from having your tongue cut out. So
unless it's cauterized.
Yeah. So, well, 15th century Venice, not too much cauterization going on. So I'm going, okay, the guy's going to die if I cut his tongue out. So I actually used the tongue cutting, but on another character, and he did die. So
a man can bleed out in 30 minutes if you cut his lower genitalia off.
Oh, yeah, I knew that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I knew that, too. Yep.
Why did you all know that? What are you guys researching over here? I'm sorry for your husband.
I know how to cut, how to rip a person's head off now. So yeah.
Nice.
Well, and how not to rip a person's head off.
But there's a counterpoint, just a real quick counterpoint. And then Sarah, you go. But if you know that this character is going to live through whatever injury they're going to have, you still can move past the scene by bracketing character injury, must live through it, bracket, and move on.
Yes.
So I think one of the things that we've kind of skipped over is the fact that we're talking about sprinting. We're talking about 200 to 500 words at a shot. You can go back and edit before you start your next sprint. Uh-huh. You can go back and research those details before you start your next scene. You know, these things are, you're not right. You know, it would be really, really hard to write 500 words in 20 minutes if you actually had to chisel it into stone. So the backspace key is your friend. You know, you can go in and edit it in between these things. This is just about getting the basics down. It's not about having a final product. It's not about having all of the details perfect. It's about getting those words out so that you can progress with your story.
Yes. I agree there. But I do see the research side. I see the other points. But yeah, if we're talking about just getting the words out so you actually finish that story, you know, don't be afraid to put it in brackets and come back later.
Mm-hmm. And just to clarify, men don't have upper genitalia. Brian Tan has called me out on that. Brian, shut up, dude.
It sounds like Anita and I are researching a lot of the same things, which is really scary.
Yes. You guys are
that surprised me.
Are you guys really angry about stuff?
No.
No, but I kill off a lot of characters. You know, I gotta keep it fresh, get them new ways to kill them off, you know.
Actually, I'm pretty sure that the bleeding out of the genitals thing went around on Facebook for a while.
Yeah.
Well, I've never actually used that in a book. I just happened to read it somewhere. So
I think I saw it on an episode of Bones is where I saw it, I think. Probably. Yeah. That's what I've been watching lately.
I know the arterial bleed on a leg, you know, if you stab somebody in the thigh and hit the artery, it takes 4 minutes to bleed out.
Yeah, that's fast. That's super fast.
Yeah. Yep.
Guys, do you like our...
I had that in one of my books, so I knew he had 4 minutes to do this to get...
Oh, Julia says, I saw it in a scary movie. Julia, have you seen the movie Teeth? If you haven't seen the movie Teeth, you got to go see the movie. You got to, don't pay for it. Just stream it somewhere. Yeah, you know, watch that movie. It'll crack you up. But
Filming Inc. does not advocate piracy.
Oh, I hope you guys are liking our cool, colorful background here. It kind of matches my new tattoo. I don't know if you guys can see my new tattoo. It's a rainbow skull. It's still healing, so it kind of looks cruddy right now. But
I love it.
My newest fun piece. Wow. What were we talking about?
I don't know.
Research. Oh, Brian is going to try not to have a bris. Is it bris or brie? It's bris, right? Bris.
Okay. I haven't been on the show since we went to North Carolina, have I?
Oh, yeah. It's been a while.
Well, we took October off.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. I almost went skydiving. My husband did go.
Wow. Holy smokes.
And we were talking about getting tattoos, so that's a thought. For somebody afraid of needles, that's the matter with.
That's exciting. That's really exciting. Wow, that sounds like you had an exciting month.
Yeah, very exciting month. I mean, he absolutely loved it. I wish I could have gone, but we were told there wasn't enough room. And then I went and partook in the little buffet that my sister-in-law brought to this place. And then I went over and he said, "We can go." And I'm like, "I just ate cheese. Not happening."
Well, and speaking of torturing your characters, that's a great segue into our next segment here, Jane, is torturing our characters and why we love to do it.
The adrenaline rush.
For us or for them?
It's fun.
Okay, so we've got Katie who writes fantasy. We've got Jane, who writes dark fantasy,
supernatural suspense. Yeah.
Supernatural suspense. Okay. Yeah. Okay. We've got Anita who writes fantasy and dark fantasy, right?
Mm-hmm. Horror.
And horror. And then Sarah, who also writes dark fantasy type fiction, right? Did you say horror as well?
Sometimes, yeah.
Okay. Awesome. So this is a group of people who this is a group of really sadistic people. These are not good people in this panel right now.
You just don't want us in a dark room.
Yes. Yes. We only murder imaginary people.
Yes. I'll take that answer.
You know, do you ever wonder, you know, okay, here's an idea. All right. Yeah, I'm striking out with all my movie references with you guys. Do you remember the movie or the book, because it was a book, Minority Report?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, you remember the concept of it. Okay. These psychics could predict when someone was going to commit a crime or if they were going to, and then they would go get arrested before it happened. You know, obviously there's going to be some complications, otherwise it'd be boring. But what if they had a way of seeing our impure thoughts, you know, our violent thoughts or our, you know, really naughty sexual stuff and the things that we're going to do to our characters? Do you think that somebody would come and take us away? Even though we haven't, you know, committed crimes in real life, you know, if they saw what was in a writer's head?
I don't think it's just writers. I think it's everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, the French have that, there's a phrase that's like, it translates to looking into the void where, you know, like you're driving down the road and you have that passing thought of, hey, I could, you know, drive my car into the pylon and kill my whole family. And nobody ever does that because that's stupid. But people have those thoughts where, you know, you're walking along a high ledge and you think, huh, I could just jump right here. People do that. People have those thoughts. I don't think the bar would be low enough.
Don't ever get into a car with Sarah.
Right.
My exercise are through writing, though. We get to experience that instead of saying what if and doing it. We what if it on paper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've had a conversation with my husband. He has no clue of how my brain works. And sometimes it scares him. My son and I are the same. We can sit there and have the most bizarre conversation, and my husband's looking at us like we should be committed. Seriously. Because we have, you know, character arcs and stuff like that. And he's just, so there aren't people, or there are people out there that don't think like us completely, which, you know, I found that out when I was younger, when my daughter was supposed to write a thing on a rainbow. I said, well, close your eyes and see it. And she's like, what? And he's like, looking at me like, what? And I'm like, you can't do that. You can't.
The hills are like white elephants. Come on, dude.
Yeah, you can't close your eyes and see it. And that was the first time in my life that I realized not everybody has this framework.
Right. But people do have the dark thoughts.
Right. Yeah, the dark thoughts, absolutely.
Well, and but my daily dark thoughts are not nearly as dark or macabre or horrible or anything as my writing dark thoughts. So they're like two separate things. I mean, I don't go around wanting to kill my neighbors.
Right, exactly.
My characters do, but I don't.
I'll take that answer.
You know, I have brief moments where I, you know, wish I could become my characters and do awful things, but
no, I don't. My characters are just mean. They're just really, really mean people.
Well, you know, and I write horror too, but I really, and so I do torture my characters, but I don't like to. I really don't. And in fact, I would rather kill somebody off then put them through like a whole story's worth of mental anguish, because I feel like I get too empathetic with them and I'm like, man, this would really, really suck. I would just end it. Just nope, car accident. You're done. You're out of the picture. You're welcome.
Oh, I don't have that problem.
No, I don't think you do.
I honestly I've heard other writers say, you know, that they feel these scenes, these horrible scenes, when they write them, they get
shook up and traumatic, and I get it, but I don't have that problem. I can kill off people. I can maim people, torture people, kill people off. I've massacred whole palaces of people, and not a thing. Just, I sit down, I write it, it's fun. I'm fine.
And I
have a moment of horrification, and then I'm like, well, okay.
Moving on. It's like, ooh, fun times. I get to kill people today. And then, you know.
Well, I think it's when it gets real personal, when the author does we'll put it this way, and it'll be super easy for you guys to understand. So if you're watching a World War II movie and you're watching a big battle scene, and okay, you know, there's 4,000 dead guys out on the battlefield. It's all tragic. Each one of them has an amazing life story, but we're not focused on that. We're focused on big picture, and there's not a big emotional impact. However, if you're focused on, you know, one or two guys throughout a movie or a book, and you see one of these guys get killed, that's going to have a much greater emotional impact, at least on me. And so I think that's what really gets me. You know, I can watch movies where, you know, whole civilizations are getting wiped out, but, you know, if I have to see the family's dog get killed, I mean, I'm bawling on the couch, and I don't know. But at the same time, I keep watching them, and I keep writing these horrible things too. I can't stop. That's
cool, though. You can't kill the dog, right, Jane? You can't kill the dog. You
can't kill the dog.
Julia, we talked about that. You can't kill the dog.
Nope.
As a reader, I feel that, you know, I mean, when other authors kill their characters off and I read about it, I get mad at them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm still mad at Andy Pellegrin for a story he wrote, but, you know, so I mean, I get it as a reader's, from a reader's point of view, but from an author's point of view, I don't have that emotional connection. It's just like, yes, oh, we get to make awful things happen to the characters today. How can we make them suffer?
So you haven't had a moment where you've written something, read it, and then got emotional about it?
No, I mean, I have had qualms once about killing off a character because I kind of liked him a little more than I thought I would, but he's still going to die. So, yeah.
I saved a character and rewrote a story to save the character because I didn't want him to die by the end of it.
Yep.
I killed a character in a really long epilogue that, funny enough, didn't end up getting published with a book. But it was this woman's lifelong partner and her wife, and they were very old, and she ended up getting killed in a hurricane. And even as I was writing it, I was crying writing it because I was so attached to this stupid character that I made up in my head. And I was so attached to this character. I don't know. I'm just like that, though. I like doing terrible things, but then I also don't like doing them. It's really weird.
See, that's why you write yourself a good villain that you have no problems with killing in the most obscene ways, because then you really exercise that desire to like torture and kill. And it's worthwhile because it's happening to a character that deserves it.
Well, and Julia, who edited this short story book that's coming out, keeps throwing out these names of my short stories that are pretty horrible. And you got to remember, Julia, in Life of Pets, the doctor, I mean, she hated all of it. She hated what was happening. And really, in that book, she was me, you know? So there's these horrible things happening, but there's also that consciousness of it. Sorry, guys. Anyhow, Brian says he loves us, but he is about to get on the yoga mat to do I'm not sure what DDP yoga is, but yes, he's getting on the yoga mat. So go, Brian. I know you've been working out a lot. I'm cheering for you.
Yes.
I think that there's like, we like to write these scenes, these tormenting scenes, but I think it's less about the fact that, you know, we like hurting people, and more that, you know, we're trying to bring a certain catharsis to ourselves and to our readers to, you know, kind of allow people to feel these emotions that they're going to feel anyways. There's people who die. There are people who die tragically. And it's hard to get through those things if you've never had that empathy. By bringing these emotions into stories, you make it easier for people to be able to get through it in their own lives. Mm-hmm. Not that I expect any dismemberment to actually happen in most people's lives, but it could.
Yes.
It could happen. And that they will be better prepared because of, excuse me, swallowed wrong. Because of Jason or Anita or, you know, just that one scene that made it like cathartic for them to be able to process these emotions in a slightly safer environment.
Well, yeah, and I agree with you completely. And we had an author on here, Michael Brent Collings, and he wrote a really cool essay that he actually recorded for me for The Raven that was about how horror and dark fiction like horror is actually the kind of a language of hope, because we get to experience these horrific things outside of our lives and then come back to really appreciate that, oh, this is actually a pretty nice place I've got here. You know, there's nobody with a chainsaw behind me. You know, life is pretty good. But I think that you're completely right. You know, fiction, it's a safe place for us to enjoy some of the things that we would never actually want to experience in our real lives. I mean, you know, from you know, fantasy. I mean, and I love fantasy, but I would never want to live in the Lord of the Rings time. Middle Earth sounds like a nightmare, even though I love the books and the movies, you know, even right down to, you know, romance or erotica. You know, there's all these things that we can experience in the safety of our Kindle or our paperback or whatever we're reading on. And that's a really special thing. And for us as authors, you know, I think that you're absolutely right. Whoever just said that, I think that was Sarah that said that, is that we are trying to make our readers feel something. And I think that that's always our goal, whether we're trying to horrify them, whether we're trying to make them feel sadness or hope or love or excitement, we are trying to make them feel something. And it's an amazing power to have, you know. It's really cool to think that, you know, Katie opens up, you know, the life of pets, and she's just totally disgusted by what happens on page 62. It makes me feel good. Yeah. That's great.
It was such a beautiful thought, and then it took a really weird turn.
Yeah. Jason comes back.
That's the story of my life right there.
but I mean, the thing is, it does touch on a very specific concept, which is that, let's face it, modern society, there's a reason it's called the daily grind. We do not get a lot of really emotional stuff happening to us on a day-to-day basis unless you count annoyance. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
you know, being able to bring those things in is
magical.
Right. It gives us a chance to, you know, live in a way.
Well, and really, we're not in a society, at least most of us that are in a place to read books and buy books and watch shows like this, we're not in a place where we are fighting for survival, usually. Usually we, you know, we have a job, we have a routine, and like you said, Sarah, it's about getting out of that daily grind. You know, our biggest problem is boredom, you know, is how am I going to entertain myself in this 2 hours that I have that's free time for me? You know, what am I going to choose? Am I going to choose television or magazines, or I'm going to choose a fiction novel, nonfiction, whatever it is. And that's what we're providing people is that little bit of escapism and, you know, perspective. Yeah. Because
really, what's being cut off in traffic when you've, you know, experienced the red wedding?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you what, and perspective runs much, much deeper than that too, because through all of these wonderful authors out in the world, we were able to experience life through other points of view, other perspectives, other than, for me, I am, you know, middle-aged white guy in America, and I can read a novel from somewhere, anywhere in the world, and be able to experience and learn a little bit about their lives and their cultures. And I think that that's a hugely important thing for all of us to be able to learn about people that aren't us, that don't look just like us. And I think that that, again, is just one of these cool things about being able to pick up a book and read. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I didn't have anything funny to say after that one. I'll try better next time.
That was beautiful, Jason.
That was, yeah, very poignant, very beautiful. You did good.
Yes.
I don't feel comfortable with that.
He's like, I'm dying to burst out now. I just need to burst out.
You'll want to see my leggings again that I put.
No.
The pendulum swings back the other way.
Oh, goodness. I've talked enough tonight.
That's why we love you, Jason. As long as you don't kill the dog.
What's that?
So long as you don't kill the dog.
Don't kill the dog. I have.
Kate gets mad at me when I do that.
I have killed the dog, and it was. It was bad.
It's an emotional scene for me too. That's the one I get the most emotional about. It's not the people; it's the dog.
Yeah. I haven't actually killed many pets, though.
Well, I don't anymore. all of my fan mail has been angry mail about
this. I killed a couple pets off page in one story, but that's about it, I think. The animals don't usually die.
Animals just are the people. They can't die. People do bad things.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the good people die too. All the people die in my stories.
Innocent creature dying that really like pulls at everyone's emotions.
Mm-hmm. What was that?
Sorry, I'm making comments on Facebook. Sorry.
Okay.
Julia, I called you Julie. I'm sorry. I'm trying to type and laugh and vape and do this all at the same time. It's hard, okay? My hands are full. Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, Julia, I don't know if you read that book. That was Whispers in the Shadows, where that actually happens. And just, I'm not absolving myself here, but that scene was actually what started the book, is my wife told me about a boy she went to high school with who actually did that to the dog. And I'm not going to tell you what it is, because it's pretty terrible. And so out of that scene, I kind of began crafting the whole thing, you know, how this horrible situation come about. And then, you know, my wife is really my biggest muse. She is amazing. And she has had some amazing women in her past. And so she was telling me about her grandmother and her aunt Stevie, who is actually her grandmother's wife, but they, you know, marriage wasn't a thing at the time for same-sex couples. And so they had these incredible stories. I'm like, well, I'm going to weave all of this into this story together. And it ended up being a really cool thing, and I'm really excited about it. So how did we get started talking about that? Somebody said Bad Jason. Come on now. Oh, that was you. That was Katie that said Bad Jason.
She hasn't said Bad Jane, so...
We had that conversation in the book that we were co-writing.
You have read it.
I was like, no, you can't
do that. Not that one. That one, it made sense. But the times that I've had that happen, it's happened.
And like a little kid throwing a temper tantrum. You can't do that.
Oh man, Mike, you nailed it. Mike says my wife gets onto me about things that happen in my story. She's like, you better not kill the character based on me again. You know what, Mike? You know, I hear you, man. It's like almost all my female characters are kind of based on my wife because she's the one I'm closest to, you know? And so she'll read them and she's like, not good. I'm like, oh, okay, sorry. So what does everybody have coming out? Because we've got like just a couple minutes left. What's coming up for new releases and stuff like that?
Sarah, what do you have?
Oh gosh. I have about a million whips and nothing close to being done. So,
whips.
I'm working on book 4 of the Runespell series. I'm working on book 3 of the Hot Fae Nights series. And I have a couple of short stories that I need to get cleaned up and just thrown on for my 99 cent shorts, but yeah, I'm just kind of slogging through Nano right now, trying to get stuff done.
Oh, yeah, well, good luck with Nano.
Anita, what about you?
I've got a couple of anthologies coming out. Cogs, Crowns, and Carriages should be out soon with my short story, Secrets and Airships. I hope that's the title. And I've got the Christmas Lights charity anthology will be out next month, and you can read all about the Thunder Penguin.
Cute.
And the Great North Pole War between the elves and the reindeer.
Nice.
Awesome.
Yeah, awesome. That one's a humor story. There's no killing except the elf on the shelf bite the dust, but
yes.
But there are glitter bombs and thunder penguins again. Thunder penguins.
I like it. Well, here, keep that up there. I'm gonna put that up.
That is some of my merch that's in my Redbubble store.
So cute.
That is adorable.
Yeah, and part of the proceeds from all the Thunder Penguin merchandise will be going to the same charity as the book. So, or I'm not sure if I can donate to the American version, but it will be some Canadian version if I can't. So, because the proceeds from the Christmas Lights books go to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And I've been in those. I've had a story in those books since book Christmas Lights 3, and this will be number 9 this year. So,
cool.
Nice.
Well, Jane, do you have anything big coming up?
Yeah, I have Winter's Heart, which is a story about a woman who the town thinks is their savior, the magical one that's supposed to stop the white tiger from attacking the town when he wakes.
Ooh, cool. Yes.
Yep. And then Katie and I have our first book, Beneath, coming out in December 15th.
Yay!
The paperback will be out this month.
The paperback will be out this month?
Yes.
And it's called Beneath?
Yep.
Awesome. That's awesome. Katie, what do you have that you want to talk about?
Well, I actually just got the editing notes back today, so I will be finishing that up. And book 4 in the Agents of Asset series that has been almost a year since the last release will finally see the light of day. That's coming out, I believe the 25th is the actual release day on that one. I'm also with Jane on the Running from the Devil series. We've got book 1 and book 2 done. They're going to be released in December and January December, January, and February for the trilogy. And we're getting closer on the third one.
Yeah, we're more than halfway done.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We'll definitely meet our editing deadline for that one.
Oh, definitely.
I get to shout out again to just a couple of people. This one is a book I actually worked on the interior. I did the layout for.
Beautiful cover too.
It's absolutely gorgeous. And so he just released his book and it looks awesome. It's part of a series. And then back to one of our creators here. Let's see if I can get this squared up just right. There we go. David Jones's new board game. I don't know exactly when he's releasing it, but right now we got to do, Jason, you and I, we got to see the sample copies and get to play them. And I think he's got a real winner here.
Yeah. And cool. David is a very, very talented guy. David and Katie are the original creators of Spilling Ink. So they're the reason we are all here. So excited about them. And then I have my collection of short stories will be released on January 16th. It is called A Flutter of Darkness, and it is 15 very dark stories with one in there that's not so dark. It's kind of nice, a little bit sad maybe. And for anyone who happens to be watching this, I think that I actually have a few free copies of the advanced copies available on Story Origin right now. And if you're interested in reading that, just shoot me a little message or drop a comment on here, and I'll make sure that you get set up with a copy, because I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. But that's it for tonight, guys. We are at our time. I want to say thanks to our guests. Thank you so much, Anita and Sarah, for coming on. It was lovely to have you.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
I never know if they're gonna. Never know if they're gonna talk or just smile at us or what. So I just kind of wait and I look at them. I'm like, I don't know what's gonna happen. Yeah. What is Julia a link to? What do you want a link to? Wait. That's Mike wants to be on the show, but Julia also wants dat link. Julia, I don't know what dat link is, but let us know after the show. Oh, maybe Story Origin. You're right. Or if you guys want to see a really cool book trailer that I made myself. Yes. If you just go to YouTube and type in A Flutter of Darkness, you will find it. And that is the book trailer for my new book. It was all shot and cut together by my wife and I, including an original song by one of my good friends. So cool. All right. But it really is time to go, guys. It was lovely talking to you all. And if you like this, hit subscribe or like or share wherever you happen to be, or just shoot us a message and say, hey, you know, I like the show. Or like Mike just did, he says, I want to be on your show, Jason and Katie. That's not the right comment. There we go. Yeah. Beautiful. Mike, we will get you on the show, man. Yes. All right. Everybody else, take care. Have a good night. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.